Ghosts, UFOs, cryptids, life after death. You'll hear great thinkers on these subjects and more on the Paranormal Podcast, the longest running podcast of its type. I'm Jim Harold, and I invite you to join me as we explore the mysteries of life. I bet you love these topics just as much as I do, but don't worry, I won't tell anyone. Join me for some great paranormal conversation. Listen on Spotify or wherever you get your podcasts.
Today is Friday, March 6th, 2020. On this day in 1951, Ethel and Julius Rosenberg's espionage trial began in New York's federal court. Today, nearly 70 years after the trial, the Rosenbergs' guilt or innocence is still a matter of debate. Welcome to Today in True Crime, a Parcast original. I'm Vanessa Richardson, and today I'm covering the 1951 espionage trial of Julius and Ethel Rosenberg. Their actions against the U.S. were considered so heinous, FBI Director J. Edgar Hoover labeled the Rosenberg case the crime of the century. Before we unpack the ramifications of the proceedings, let's go back to the morning of March 6th, 1951, in a New York federal courtroom. The Rosenberg trial captivated audiences all over the world, but particularly in New York, members of the press struggled to wade through the crowd of spectators who spilled out of the courtroom, down the hallway, and outside onto the steps of the courthouse. No one outside the courtroom would be able to see or hear what was happening inside, but everyone wanted to be present for the trial that sharply divided the American public. The prosecution's star witness, David Greenglass, had worked on the Manhattan Project, tasked with creating an atomic bomb. He too was charged with espionage alongside the other major defendants. He was also Ethel Rosenberg's brother. Greenglass looked uncertain as he entered the court. His weight had fluctuated considerably as the trial neared, leading up to his appearance in court as the prosecution's star witness against the Rosenbergs, a reflection of the stress he must have felt over his sister's fate and his own. The prosecution had offered Greenglass a deal, a reduced sentence and no risk of the death penalty, in exchange for testifying against his sister and brother-in-law. All eyes were on David Greenglass as he took the witness stand. He testified that Ethel and Julius were communist sympathizers who'd once been members of the U.S. Communist Party. He claimed that once Ethel had learned about his work on the secret Manhattan Project in 1944, his sister began asking him for information about the bomb. By that time, according to Greenglass, Julius Rosenberg had started working directly for the Soviet Union as a top-secret informant. Most damning of all, Greenglass testified that in 1945, he delivered sketches of components from the atomic bomb to Julius, knowing that Julius would in turn deliver the information to his Soviet contacts. But the sketches from Greenglass weren't enough for Julius. He wanted a more detailed description of the work that Greenglass was doing at the Los Alamos laboratory. Greenglass compiled several pages worth of notes and two lists for Julius. The first contained the names of the scientists working on the bomb, and the second named individuals he thought might be persuaded to perform covert espionage work for the Soviet Union. Most of the testimony Greenglass delivered was aimed at his brother-in-law, Julius Rosenberg. But when the time came, Greenglass also implicated his sister, Ethel. According to Greenglass, Ethel Rosenberg typed up the notes that he had brought to Julius while all three were together. Julius and Greenglass clarified typos, while Ethel allegedly produced the final document that ended up in Russian hands. Coming up, the Rosenbergs take the witness stand, and the court delivers a verdict. Now, back to the story. On March 6, 1951, 35-year-old Ethel Rosenberg and her husband, 32-year-old Julius, stood trial for conspiracy to commit espionage against the United States. David Greenglass, the star witness for the prosecution, and Ethel Rosenberg's brother, accepted a deal from prosecutors in exchange for his testimony. Greenglass told the court that the Rosenbergs had organized an extensive network of spies working at various levels of government to help the Soviet Union build their own atomic bomb. After Greenglass finished testifying, Julius and Ethel Rosenberg were allowed their turn on the witness stand. Both categorically denied every allegation that Greenglass had made against them, insisting that neither of them knew anything about Greenglass's secretive work in the Los Alamos laboratory. When asked which country he felt an allegiance to, Julius responded, "I am in favor, heartily in favor, of our Constitution and Bill of Rights, and I owe my allegiance to my country at all times." But when the prosecution asked questions about the Rosenbergs' membership in the Communist Party and their attitudes towards the Soviet Union, both Julius and Ethel refused to answer several questions on the grounds that their responses could potentially be incriminating. This refusal played right into the prosecution's argument. It made the Rosenbergs look suspicious in the eyes of the jury. Because the charge was conspiracy to commit espionage and not necessarily espionage itself, the prosecution didn't need to produce any tangible evidence, just enough testimony against the Rosenbergs to convince the jury that the Rosenbergs had organized the operation. The trial lasted just over 3 weeks, and the jury deliberated for 6.5 hours. On March 29, 1951, they delivered their verdict. Julius and Ethel Rosenberg were both found guilty of conspiracy to commit espionage against the United States. A week after the jury delivered a guilty verdict, Judge Irving Kaufman handed down the Rosenbergs' sentence: death. Judge Kaufman justified this severe punishment by saying, "I consider your crime worse than murder." He told the Rosenbergs that he believed their actions had helped speed up the Soviets' development of an atomic bomb, and that their efforts, quote, "undoubtedly have altered the course of history to the disadvantage of our country." A now famous photograph was taken of Julius and Ethel Rosenberg just before being transported from court. In the photo, the two are kissing deeply, with Julius's handcuffed arms embracing his wife's shoulders from above. The couple look stoic, but not afraid. If they had any anxiety about their fate, it doesn't show in the existing photographs or in the letters that the Rosenbergs wrote to one another from their separate prison cells. On April 10, 1951, Julius wrote to Ethel that he believed they were better people for having stood confidently and courageously throughout their trial and sentencing. It seemed that others outside the judicial system agreed with him. Across Europe, everyone from artists and scientists to Pope Pius XII rallied in support of the Rosenbergs. The Pope made a direct request to President Dwight D. Eisenhower to let Julius and Ethel live. In the United States, over 5,000 protesters assembled at New York's Union Square in their defense. Much larger crowds gathered outside the White House, hoping to convince President Eisenhower to spare Julius and Ethel. Even world-renowned scientist J. Robert Oppenheimer, who actually developed the atomic bomb and led the Los Alamos laboratory where David Greenglass worked, came to the Rosenbergs' defense. Oppenheimer claimed that there was no elusive secret to the atomic bomb that Julius could have stolen for the Soviets. Other scientists similarly defended the Rosenbergs, arguing that any plans Greenglass and Julius might have stolen were ambiguous and incomplete, if not downright incorrect in their calculations. In other words, even if the Rosenbergs were guilty, their efforts couldn't have been instrumental in the Soviet Union developing their first nuclear weapons. Despite extensive pushback across the world, no one could convince President Eisenhower to spare the lives of Julius and Ethel Rosenberg. They were executed at Sing Sing Prison on June 19, 1953, becoming the first American civilians in U.S. history to face capital punishment on espionage charges. The Rosenbergs did not deliver any final words, but they maintained their innocence to the day they died. Ethel's brother, David Greenglass, was sentenced to 15 years in prison. Harry Gold, a U.S. chemist who served as one of Julian's fellow contacts with the Soviets, was sentenced to 30 years. Morton Sobel, an electrical engineer tried as part of the conspiracy ring, was also sentenced to 30 years in prison. Sobel had maintained his innocence for decades after the trial. However, in a dramatic revelation to the New York Times in 2008, Sobel admitted that he had, in fact, shared U.S. military secrets with the Soviet Union. Sobel also confirmed that Julius Rosenberg shared military secrets with the Soviet government, but claimed that Ethel Rosenberg was innocent. Sobel said of Ethel, quote, "She knew what he was doing, but what was she guilty of? Of being Julius's wife." Thanks for listening to Today in True Crime. I'm Vanessa Richardson. If you'd like to learn more about the Rosenbergs, listen to the episodes of the Parcast original, Espionage, which dive deeper into their story. Today in True Crime is a Parcast original. You can find more episodes of Today in True Crime and all other Parcast originals for free on Spotify. Not only does Spotify already have all of your favorite music, but now Spotify is making it easy for you to enjoy all of your favorite Parcast originals, like Today in True Crime, for free from your phone, desktop, or smart speaker. To stream Today in True Crime on Spotify, just open the app and type Today in True Crime in the search bar. At Parcast, we're grateful for you, our listeners. You allow us to do what we love. Let us know how we're doing. Reach out on Facebook and Instagram at Parcast and Twitter at Parcast Network. We'll be back with a brand new episode tomorrow in True Crime. Today in True Crime was created by Max Cutler and is a Parcast Studios original. It is executive produced by Max Cutler, sound design by Andy Waits, with production assistance by Ron Shapiro, Carly Madden, and Aaron Larson. This episode of Today in True Crime was written by Brian Petris, with writing assistance by Nora Battelle. I'm Vanessa Richardson.